So, how's everyone feeling about this cloud business? Who's jumping on the cloud? Into the cloud? Around the cloud? Who's trying to go around it? Okay. Is it coming? I want to get some feedback. Is the cloud coming? Is it something that's a certainty? Yes? Yes? No? Yeah, we could get some specific things there. Is it going to affect our lives? Yes. I might get a bit of a survey, actually. How many people are devs here? Okay. IT pros? Okay, yep. Managers? Decision makers? All of the above? Okay, it's funny coming to tech heads over so many years and you see how people are consuming devices so much differently, so much in many different ways. We've got new devices now, people access information in such a different way. And even if, as I look out at everyone's standing here today, or sitting here today, I should say, there's heaps of people on laptops and tablets and using their phones and all that sort of stuff. And they call it the consumerization of IT, I think, is some of it, that we're sort of owning the decision to have the sort of device we want and we access it the way we want. But I don't think it's us that are actually consuming the IT. I think it's the IT that's consuming us. All the technology starting to consume us. And I suppose that's one of the things that I want to get to the crux of today with this PowerShell discussion. Because it's good, actually, it's good to see so many people coming into a PowerShell discussion or a PowerShell presentation, because it makes me realize that people realize that there's sort of another side to it. You can't sort of just sit back and be the user all the time. And as this cloud thing comes along, and it affects the way that businesses work, it affects the way us as IT pros work or developers work. Our roles are going to change in some way or another. And I sort of see it, if you sort of look at that typical bell curve you see with IT roles, okay, there's a lot of generalists right in the middle. I can see that bell curve turning upside down. Anyone agree with that? And so you're either the user or the person who enables the stuff. And if you're here today, I believe that you obviously realize that you're the person who enables that. Because if you look at the cloud as a concept, what we're really looking at is hiding lots and lots of gears and automation that's turning. Is that right? I'm sure with the private cloud discussion that's happening all across the conference center, if you look at it, it's all about automating your IT business, so to speak, to be more in line with the way that I suppose the business wants to operate, and that's to make whatever money or have whatever goal that organization has. Okay, so my name's Dean Corker, and I'm I suppose my role isn't the most technical at the moment. It's probably the least technical one I've had for a while, and it has to do more with cloud account management. But I've been in the industry for some time. I won't say the exact dates, but let's just say it was the early 90s, and I cut myself in the IT using a programming language known as COBOL. Anyone know that one? And if you do, we'll just leave it at that, actually, because it's showing sort of fit of the demographic, I suppose. So let's have a bit of a look at what we're going to cover today. So automation, why are we here? What's it all about? We'll have a bit of a look at a quick up to speed with PowerShell. Okay, now, although this is a PowerShell above and beyond, I sort of realize in a lot of the presentations I do, there's definitely people come in, they think, oh yeah, cool, I'm going to learn some really top-level PowerShell stuff, but you sort of miss some of the basics. So some of the agenda today is I'm going to go through and go hard and fast, quite ad hoc, so I'm sure I'm going to make heaps of mistakes. That's what we want to see, because if you make mistakes, you learn from the mistakes. The only way you find out there's a wall there is if you walk into it. So that's the sort of attitude I've got today. There's not many slides either. Okay, is that good? Damn. So my feelings of security up here are actually quite. I'm feeling quite vulnerable because it's a little bit. It's not terribly scripted, you might say. So then we'll have a bit of a look at getting our hands dirty. So we'll review PowerShell. I pretty much dropped the slides. Okay, we'll just go straight to PowerShell. We'll start right from the beginnings of what PowerShell is, and we're going to move very quickly through variables and loops and conditional operators, and then we'll start to have a bit of a play with things like GUIs. We'll have a brief look at workflow capabilities, and we'll have a look at WMI, and then I'll show you how to put some PowerShell into an executable. Okay. So you can effectively hide it, I suppose. Okay, so automation. Once upon a time, a long time ago, I think I was in high school or something like that, I saw a program on computers and it said, computers are good at highly repetitive tasks. I went, yep, they really are. You can say, you know, what's 1 plus 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 1, so on and so forth. It's not going to complain. And it's just going to do it, and it'll get back to you with the answer. And I like Adam's discussion on prime numbers and the biggest prime number at the opening keynote the other day on, you know, that relentlessness and the objectiveness of computing. But the funny thing is, I look around and I see a lot of IT pros out there and IT people doing highly repetitive tasks. And so it makes me sort of think, okay, I don't think we've got the perspective on the computing right. What we really need to be doing is not walking around and putting USB drives in the computers and installing them that way. You've got to look at that stuff that you're doing a lot of and use the capabilities of the computer and say, okay, this is a thing that's just going to do it for me and not complain. Okay? And if you're not the person who implements the automation, then you're the person who gets made redundant because of someone else implementing it. Is that a fair call? Yep, okay. So that's really what it's about. And you look at industry, you look at economies. Economies are driven by efficiency. The biggest economies in the world are driven by how efficient they are. It's not necessarily just the economies of scale of the number of people, but obviously the largest economies don't have the highest population. It's all about making things more efficient. It's much easier to build a road using machines than it is to just throw a whole heap of people at it. And a lot more cost effective in the long run. It takes a little bit of effort to get there, but we don't want the machines coming back to get us, do we? Okay, so I look at things like System Center Configuration Manager. I've got a name for System Center Configuration Manager. I call it Skynet. Okay, because it's that thing that does all the work for you, and you put so many smarts into it, and things like System Center Orchestrator, previously known as a Parlous. Is anyone aware of that one? Seems to be a hot topic. Go and have a bit of a look at that. It's a very powerful workflow product that pulls together a lot of Microsoft's System Center suite of products and a lot of other things as well. Very, very powerful. And it really does remove, you know, certain people's roles if you're smart about it, being very reactive and even preemptive in many circumstances. So we're definitely going there. Okay, so infrastructure optimization model. Now, this is something I used to look at a long time ago and say, that's just Microsoft marketing stuff. How annoying is this? I used to look at it and go, oh, this is just something that some sales guy says. And then I went, hang on a second, this is actually one of the smartest slides I've ever seen. When you actually pull it apart and start to understand what the way you should be running your IT business. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but basically on the left-hand side, we have what's known as basic. These are organizations that are very ad hoc. They don't have any standardization within their organization. If you need a new operating system, it came with the PC. If you need to update or replace an operating system, someone runs around with a CD. At best, they might have a network drive set up to make it a lot easier. But there's no standardization, no real process. There's a lot of firefighting going on. Next one, standardized. With standardized, you've said, okay, it's going to be a lot easier to support things. If when someone calls up, we know what it is that they've actually got. We don't have to go digging around all the time. Okay, so you standardize an operating system, you standardize on an environment, and you're starting to become a little bit more efficient and making your life a lot easier. But still, there's a lot of firefighting. There's a lot of running around and a lot of effort on the part of the IT person. The next one's rationalised. There's a big difference between standardised and rationalised. Rationalised means that as an IT guy or gal, you now understand the business and how IT affects the business. So we have things like SLAs coming into play. We know that if that server comes down, someone's going to really be upset with me. Okay, so you start to prioritise the way you work around that. Now, the last one is what we're really here to talk about today, and that's dynamic. It means that when someone in the business says, I need something, they don't have to necessarily get on the phone to you and say, hi, how are you doing? I want to have Visio installed. Okay? And we get this sort of process taking place where the person who wants Visio installed goes to a SharePoint website, for example. They click on the Applications tab, and they request Visio for their machine. Of course, Visio is something you may have to license maybe per head in your organisation. And so what happens behind the scenes is an email automatically gets sent to their manager to approve that the cost of that license. Okay, that email, they then click on a link within that that goes back to SharePoint, and then they click approve. And of course, what happens when they click approve is a little automation piece happens where maybe the user gets added to a group, and then a product like System Center Configuration Manager or some other automated script that you've run is periodically enumerating the list of people in the group to see if anyone new's come along, and then the computer that they're sitting on happens to realise that there's an advertisement or advertisement, depending on what side of the world you're from, reaches out and installs the application for the user, and there's been no IT person in that at all. Does that make sense? Is that realistic? It's actually really realistic. When I was telling that story to people not long ago, people were going, oh, wow, I'd like to do that. But there's probably a few people here in the audience that are already doing that sort of stuff. Okay, and even things like, you know, Windows. Has anyone seen the Windows Reliability Index in Windows 7? Gives that little bar that's sort of like a health meter. Okay. That has information that's stored or can be retrieved via the WMI. Okay, so what we could do is we could be periodically querying all the computers across our organisation to find the ones that haven't been feeling very well for a prolonged period of time. And then overnight you schedule those machines to get re-imaged. So even before that person called, you know, there's someone going, oh, this machine keeps crashing, I don't know what's going on. Of course, Windows doesn't crash, this is a hypothetical. And they think, I've got to call the help desk. This is really starting to piss me off. And then they go, oh, actually, the problem went away. Or maybe they do call up the service desk, and the service desk goes and checks the logs and finds out that actually that night their computer was a re-image and says, look, what we'll do is you just watch it for a bit longer. If you have a problem, call back again, and maybe it's something else. Maybe it's hardware. Okay. So That's the story that we're looking at. And so we're looking at a bit of a graph down the bottom there where your costs and your service levels start to intersect and become much more favourable to business. Okay, and your agility, your ability to do cool things like adopt new products and actually play with the stuff you want to play with is as an IT person, if you like that, it enables you a lot more. Now, why am I having this conversation when we're talking to a whole heap of geeks, so to speak? Because we need to realise this, because if you don't realise it, you might become redundant. Okay, so, and that, IT changes. Does IT change? Well, this is the industry that changes more than any other industry, so we've got to adapt to it. So let's get into it. Okay, automation equals increased efficiency. Okay, less time, dollars, increased output. Increased output equals dollars. More time, more work, or more play, you choose. Okay, so maybe you automate stuff and tell people you're still doing it. Yep, oops. Okay, so dynamic IT reacts to business conditions, and that's, you know, going back to the business thing. And simply put, you can... You can either be paying for masses, or you can be one of the people who gets paid instead of the masses, so to speak. Okay, so okay, let's get into what we're here to talk about today. Up to speed, overview of PowerShell. Who knows PowerShell? There's a few people here. Who uses it every day? Cool, okay. Who's never used it? Okay. So it's sort of a good little cross-section there. Okay, so what is PowerShell? Microsoft Strategic Automation Platform. Implements revolutionary scripting language. Sorry, guys. I've come to the reality that I am a geek. I can now see the screen. Okay. Does it replace the command line? Not 100%, but for the most part, moving forward, you're going to see it replacing the command line a lot more. Okay, we have a console host, which operates a lot like a command line, and we have an integrated scripting environment that's a nice little GUI-style environment. There's lots of other plugins and additions out there that people use as well. It provides hosting and extension APIs that we can work with. It's very extensible, and as a lot of people break their way into PowerShell because they're using Exchange 2010 or something like that, which basically says, hey, some of the parts of the GUI don't provide what you want, and so if you want to do it, you can still do it. You've got to do it via PowerShell, and so most people get their first cut that way because they're forced into doing something the business wants because and there's no other way to do it. You're forced away from the GUI. Okay. It accepts lots of data formats. It's fairly type agnostic as far as the way you interact with it. And, of course, it gives you the ability to create your own solutions. And my agenda here is to sort of get in and enable you guys a lot more. And I suppose teach you to fish a bit. You can write down lots of stuff that I'll show you today, but hopefully it just gives you a bit of direction more so. Okay, what's .NET? The developers here will probably tell you what .NET is. The non-developers here would probably say, oh, it's that annoying thing you have to install and update all the time. .NET is a really, really good idea. Number one, it brings all the different types of wheels that have already been invented ready for you so you don't have to invent them again. And there's lots of extensibility and lots of access to different parts of the operating system within that. One of the coolest things about .NET as someone who develops or scripts is that unlike some runtime environments that try and create an agnostic hardware point of view, in other words, it should be able to run on any hardware platform or any architecture, .NET does not lock you into any given programming language. Okay, so if you see at the top there, we have the ability to use VB or C#, JScript, C++, or we can use PowerShell. Now, I don't want to be scaring off the IT pros here. You probably thought, oh, okay, I didn't expect we'd be talking about .NET and that sort of stuff. I'm going to try and make .NET as approachable as possible for those people here so we can get more out of it. Okay, so basically we work from the top down and we can get access to the very low-level operating system APIs if we wish. But mainly there's a lot of stuff in there that we can use. Now, some people might say, oh, PowerShell doesn't have the ability to do X, Y, and Z. That's pretty much never true with PowerShell because we can always hook into something that does have that capability. Okay, and so that's what we're going to see in particular when we play with the GUIs in a little while. And hopefully, I'm going to try and make it. I've spoken about business a fair bit. The last thing I'm going to do today is something that's got nothing to do with business. So we'll see. Hopefully, we're going to have time. Okay, .NET Framework Universe. Some of you might have seen this picture before. This is just to scare you. Okay, don't put your glasses or anything. You can't see the text. It's probably outside the scope of the resolution. Too small there. But basically, I'm just trying to push home. You've got a heck of a lot of stuff in there. That's a poster you can download. But there's lots and lots of stuff that you can get into or hook into with .NET that's been done before. It's just amazing. .NET evolves so quickly that people that I know that work with .NET have sort of refused to really learn all the new features all the time and have just learnt that they need to be more resourceful about finding what they need in .NET when they need it. What I'm really getting at there is that there's a host of capabilities we can leverage upon with PowerShell. Okay, for starters, getting back to PowerShell more specifically. For those who are new, PowerShell provides you with an interface which should not be confronting. If you've done anything on the command line before, then you should be able to use most of those command lines still. Okay, many still work. Many of the Unix commands work as well. So those people who work on multiple platforms and you find yourself typing an ls into a Windows machine and dir into a Unix machine, then that shouldn't be too much of a problem, because the way that PowerShell enables you to create an alias for anything means that most of the commands you're familiar with operate very similarly to, or can be used and operate very similarly to the way that they work in the other environments you're used to there. Okay, it's got a native object-oriented pipeline. Okay, eliminates things like grep. And that's one of the things I think most people get a little bit confused about. Who understands object orientation? Ooh, a few more than just the devs. Good stuff. Did it at uni or something? Have you done anything since? Okay. Yep, okay. Look, I'm going to actually move away from the object orientation speak as much as possible. I think some people do find it confusing. It's good to see that a lot of people here do understand it. But the pipeline does get people confused, and I want to make it sort of think of it more as a table of information that passes from one commandlet to another. And we'll have a look at that in a little while. Commands are commandlets. They've got a verb hyphen noun naming convention. For example, get process, and then little hyphens for each of the parameters. We can use aliases as a great get help. Okay, and of course there's help, and there's also search engines you can use. What the thing about PowerShell is, out of all the products I've used, PowerShell is the one that seems to have the most amount of support out there on the internet for a product which has only really been available to the wider IT audience for a small amount of time. Okay, it's quite amazing how much is out there. So definitely do a lot of searching when you've got queries about how to do something. Just type natural type queries in. How do I do X in PowerShell? And you can definitely get a lot out of it. So, excuse me. Okay, so let's get our hands dirty. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is more or less an ad hoc PowerShell demonstration. And I'm going to just bear with me a little as I try and focus on the screen down the bottom there, because I can't really see. At all. So, okay, so there's our PowerShell interactive command line. PowerShell, when I first started using it, it actually got me a little nostalgic. Who's a child of 80s computers? Anyone remember things like Commodore 64s and stuff like that? Oh, yeah. Which is the way I'm going to wrap this up, actually. You'll be pleased. Okay. The cool thing about PowerShell is really, this is more of a development language in the way that it's a sort of, okay, this is a developer's language that's been adapted for interactive mode in many respects. What is cool about that? It means that you can just walk up to this ad hoc and type stuff and it happens like a command line, but at the same rate, you can create very, very powerful solutions. Okay, so, and the good thing is when you're using some of the GUI tools, it means you can just highlight parts of your code and see what happens. It's very hard to do that in some of the other development languages. Although there are ways to get some of that done with, you know, smart debugging, but for most IT pros, it's not very approachable to pull that stuff apart like that. So the first thing's going to go really quick. DIR works. Okay, cool. Everyone knows that? Okay, does it look like conventional DIR? It's a little bit different. Okay, we can do things like, well, what is DIR for starters? DIR isn't really DIR. If I type in alias DIR, we find out that DIR is actually known as get child item. Why do they use something so annoying like a big word like get child item? It's because it's right, okay? And that is, DIR goes back to the days of us thinking about directories on hard disks and stuff like that. PowerShell doesn't make any distinction between a file system on a hard disk, specifically navigating parts of the .NET framework, performing WMI, accessing Active Directory, or accessing the registry. Okay, so if we were to type a DIR, in some contexts, I should say, that would not be correct. You wouldn't be getting a directory. You'd be looking at something that would be called something else in that scenario. Okay, so it's really get hyphen, of course, tab, and we can get all the gets. Okay, so get back to get child item, and you'll see that it gives us exactly the same output there. Excuse me. Okay, so moving on a little, I'm just going to type CLS. What does that do? Clear the screen, okay. Also, it's clear hyphen hosts, but sure, you're going to use most of the aliases. The next one, get help, of course, is something you need to be looking at. Type in get hyphen help and type in the command that you want there. I'm just going to move this up a little, just realize it's just slightly off the screen for everybody. Okay, get help, and then we can say type in something like get hyphen process, and it'll get us the help on get process. So you can see there's syntax, everything there. If we type in ex for examples, I'm pressing tab, that's how I'm completing that for those who aren't as familiar. Then it gives us a whole heap of examples, 9 examples on get process. L, we could put in get, and I'm pressing up arrow. Detailed will give us the whole lot. Okay, all the majority of it. Okay, so I'm just going to clear the screen again. If I type in PS, that's get process. Okay, so the first thing we should always do in an environment that is sort of a scripting or developing sort of environment is do what? What's the first thing you always do? Very good. Well, my Lisdexia is coming up. Okay, so there's our hello world. Couldn't be much easier. Okay, this is where I start talking about the pipelining a little. Okay, the thing about PowerShell is what we see on the screen is always the dumbed down version for a human when it doesn't know what else to do with what it's got. So in other words, when you enter a command or you run a script or whichever, sometimes there's an output flow or a pipeline that flows, and at the end of the pipe, nothing is there to catch it, okay? And so what's going to happen if there's nothing to catch it is that the default behavior, at least within the command line host, is that it'll go, oh, we don't know what to do with this. What we will do is dumb it down to a default level of visibility or default level of attributes or properties that we want to see, and show it on the screen, because chances are there's a dumb human sitting there looking at me and I better give him something or they'll smash me or something. Okay, and so if I just type hello world, that's just a string, and so it's going, oh, what do I do with this? Oh, okay, there it is on the screen. Okay, and so that's how we get that. excuse me. But of course, if I type in something like a dollar, it's not a dollar, is it? Equals hello world, then it doesn't give me anything because it knew where to put it. Is that fair? Okay, and so same would be true though, if I type in dollar A, it's now going to give me hello world. Okay, so now if I put a little dot on the end of the A, what that sort of means is to show me what other things there are about this particular thing we're looking at, or this object that we're looking at, okay? So if I can start pressing tab now, it'll tell me all the things that we can do, or actually, I'll talk in the proper terminology. It'll show us all the properties or the methods that we have available to us for that particular object of whatever type it is. So if I was to put in to upper and press enter, now hello world is in uppercase. Okay, so this is where we're really seeing .NET working for us favorably here. Okay, so, excuse me. And of course, there's a lot more there that we can do. If you want to see the properties of a given object, then we can put in the A dollar, and then we can use the pipe command or the pipe operator, which goes and sends the output to somewhere else, and type in get member, and it will tell us all the methods and properties that are related to that object. Okay, so we can get a little sort of built-in documentation about whatever it is we're looking at. In this case, it's a variable, and it can tell us what type it is. In some circumstances, it might actually be a command, and it will tell us what what's available. Okay. For those who don't know object orientation, methods and properties, really quick analogy. Okay, if you think of a cow has certain properties: size, number of legs, how fluffy its ears are, how big its ears are. It also has certain methods. You can milk it, you could probably ride it, you could walk it. If you took it to Thailand, you could blow it up. Okay, so that's the things we can do. They're the things we can do to it. Okay, they're the methods. Properties are things we can find out about it. Sometimes we can apply or set those properties as well. We might be able to change the colour of the cow. Okay, so okay, let's move on a little bit quicker. CD, HKLM. Where am I? In the registry. The red there is not bad. I'm not running with any privilege level here, so it's just saying I can't see some stuff. So, oops, VF, what's that? CD, software, DIR, sort of half correct. Okay, so we're in the registry there. And so we can do with the registry just like you can the file system. Okay, so I'm not comfortable in there for some reason, so I'm just going to come out. going back to variables quickly, I might just do a quick dollar sign B equals 100. If we have a look at what B equals, and then we do B plus 34 equals 134, but what does B equal? What still equals 100? B plus equals 56. Let's have a look at what B equals 156. Is everyone following there? I'm moving very quick, not really explaining at all. Hopefully you can join the dots. Okay, we could also do B plus, B equals B plus, and that sort of conventional old school stuff that I sort of stick to a bit, but I'm using the shorthand there. Basically, I'm just adding 56 to B in that last one. So we also, let's have a look at we'll have a look at a directory here. Let's go somewhere that there's a few more files. Windows, yep, we've got some files in there. I know in Windows I'm fairly safe to show you what's in there. So if we do a DIR, well, what's DIR? It's supposed to be get child item. Let's keep it correct. Get child item, let's pipe it to sort object on the, and if we were to scroll up, just so you can see where I'm getting this from, just realise how wide this is. Hopefully that fits a bit better anyway. You can see we've got, with this output, it's a list of files in a file system. So we've got a mode property, we've got a last write time property, you've got a length property, a name property. Are those all the things we know about files? There's more stuff, isn't there? Yeah. So just going back, oops, I sorted object on nothing, but first I'm going to do length. Okay. And so now that should sort it according to length. And as you would have seen, we've gone a little too far there. We can see that the length is now sorted. If you wanted to sort it descending, then we just do that. Of course, there's a few folders there, which are sort of annoying a little. Okay. Excuse me. So there's more properties to this. Let's go and say, let's get rid of the sort object here, and we'll say, get child item. Actually, what we'll do is this. We'll say my dir equals get child item. Now, if I do a my dir, well, of course we see that. Sorry, I want. Oh, that was right, actually, wasn't it? Thinking too fast. So I'm showing my dir there now. So does my dir just have a text? Is it a piece of text there now? This is where people get a little bit confused. The my dir variable, if we have a look at it, if I say what is my dir, okay, it actually is a list of objects, really. And this is where I create the analogy of a table or a spreadsheet a lot more. Because think of what you're seeing there as being a filtered list of the columns for a particular spreadsheet. In this case, we're looking at the directory from Windows. Okay, so what we could do is Now pass this through. Let's do a for each. For each. This is looping now. We'll call it file in my dir. Okay, so to quickly explain that, what I'm going to do is go through each one of these rows, if you like, or each one of these files, and for each file, I'm going to store the value in file for each iteration, and then run this piece of code here. Okay, so we'll say file, and then we'll say length. Oops. And now we're only seeing the length. There's another way I could have got that, but I'm going somewhere with this. Okay. Of course, that shows the lot. And if we have a look at this as my dir being an array, we'll say 10. We can see that now we're looking at the 10th entry in my dir. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm not going to count. You'll just have to take my word for it. I'm not going to mess around too much there. And now what I can do is I can actually pipe that to get-member, and we can find that we can see there's a lot more properties to this particular file. There's a name. There's even methods. This is a folder by the look of it. But there could have been things like encryption or looking at various attributes. We could delete it, we could copy it, etc. Okay, so let's move on. Let's get into something a little more fun. Okay, I'm just going to go quickly back to the slides just to set the context. Okay, GUIs. Okay, with PowerShell there isn't any built-in GUI functionality. Okay, in the actual PowerShell scripts itself, I'm sure there's some downloadable components you can add to PowerShell which go and add scripting functionality. But I should say GUI functionality. But generally speaking, it means we have to leverage on other things that PowerShell has access to, and of course this means .NET. The other thing being is that there isn't any visual PowerShell capability like we have with Visual Basic or Visual Studio in general, where we can go and create a little GUI. Again, there's probably third-party things out there you can find, so you can do a drag and drop and make GUI interfaces. Okay, but what we need to do is we need to tap into the .NET namespace. So let's go back, and for this, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use not the interactive, or sorry, the command shell, but I'm going to use the Windows integrated scripting, Windows PowerShell integrated scripting environment. Now, look, some of you will say, hey, I use Power GUI and things like that. There's lots of others out there. I just want to stick with the ones that we've got available to us from within Windows itself or when you install PowerShell. Okay, part of PowerShell version 2, we've got the integrated scripting environment, which is a sort of semi-GUI environment for us to do a little bit, make it a bit easier for us to script within PowerShell. So I can put in a lot more lines of code there. So, okay, the first thing we need to do if we're going to perform anything with a GUI within PowerShell is basically tell PowerShell that we want to reference something within .NET. Okay, so fortunately, I know where I'm going with this one, okay, as far as getting access to the .NET namespace and telling PowerShell what part I want. I'm not going to explain every part of this. For the developers here, you're going to you'll probably understand exactly what it means, what I'm typing in, but for most of us here, we'll just look at this as saying, let's perform an include. We're basically saying, go out somewhere else, get access to some other components within the .NET namespace, and say that we want to use some of its functionality. Okay, so what we do is we type in this. Reflection.assembly. And then we say load. with partial name, and then we'd say what part of the .NET namespace we're after. So system.windows.forms. Okay. Now, as I'm typing on the right-hand side here, this is just like a text editor. It isn't actually executing it. Now, for the purposes of demonstration, I'm going to execute each piece by pressing F8, which executes the piece of code that I'm highlighting. Okay, and so it's just gone and said, yep, okay, cool, we've got access to that now. I'll know what you're talking about if you're creating new objects that come from this namespace. Okay, so the first thing what we'll do, I think, is do something really simple. Now, quite often, once you start going into PowerShell scripts, at some stage you might want to make a PowerShell script a little bit more dynamic and not just be pulling information from other automated systems. Sometimes we admit a human needs to be involved to select a file or something like that. And so one of the easiest pieces of GUI interaction that you can place is to create a file dialog. Okay, so what I'm saying is create a variable called dialog. I could call it whatever I want. We'll call it dialog. I'll then say it's going to equal a new object. Okay, so what we're saying is go and create a brand new object, and now we have to tell it what that object is. What type of object is we need to create as a new one. Okay, so I'll then reference the object within the .NET namespace. So windows.forms.openfile.gialog. I hope I've got that right. Because the one thing that doesn't work within creating new objects is pressing tab throughout the .NET namespace here. If you use some of the other GUI products that you can download, there's some open source ones out there like Power GUI, they make this a little easier. Okay, so when I do that and press, that's not what I wanted, is it? Press F8, all I've done is go and say, okay, we created a new object, it's stored in a variable, but we're not doing anything with it. We haven't told it to start up. And so just where we're at the moment, we've got the interactive line down here as well. So if I type in dialogue, okay, and then press dot, you can see all the different things that we can find out or do to this dialogue. So you can change the title and maybe change the size or the style. And of course, one of the things that we're going to want to get out of this ultimately is whatever the user selects within the file. Okay, so back over here again. Well, what I could do is do get member, and that will then show us all of that in a list. Now, keep in mind that some objects within the .NET namespace have pretty got lots and lots and lots and lots of properties and methods. So, dialog dot show. In this case, what's happening? I think that's right. Okay. In this case, what I'm going to do is run a method. We can actually tell the dialogue to do something now. And the thing I'm telling it to do is show itself. Okay, so let's execute that. And of course you don't see it because I'm actually running dual screens here. And there it is. Okay, and now I'm actually giving away some of the end game. Okay, so what we could then do is say click on script, click open. And of course it doesn't seem like anything's happened, but what's actually happened now is we should be able to go over here and type in dialog dot, and chances are that I think it's file name, and press enter, and now it's told me what it was I selected. You've got the path, and so you can now pass that to the next parameter, which might be delete or who knows. Okay, so they'll pass it on through the pipeline to the next part of your script. So that's a really, really, really basic sort of entry into Windows Forms or GUI components. Okay, so let's go a bit further now. Actually, I might just Control Z that so I don't create the illusion that I'm not using that assembly anymore. Can everyone see that okay? Yep. Now, if you're right at the back, that's your own problem. Come on. Seriously. There's plenty of seats down the front. So okay, so what we're going to do now, let's go and create something a little bit more fun. What we're going to do is we're going to create a form. We'll call it a form. This is often what we call a Windows form. We'll just call it a form. Form equals new object windows.forms.form. Now, what a form is, for those who don't know, it's basically just creating a window with nothing in it at all. It's got a title bar. We can probably set the text in the title bar. You can change the size of it. But it just sits there with nothing in it at all, waiting for us to close it. Okay? So, and I suppose I'll demonstrate that to you by saying, okay, form. I'll put it in here so I can highlight it. Form.show. Well, because I haven't created it yet, I have to execute this, don't I? I told you I was going to make mistakes. Now I can type this. Thank you. Obviously, my glasses need to be changed as well. Show dialogue, and we'll go. And I'll have to bring it across because you can't see it. There it is. Okay, and as I said, nothing there. Okay, so we can close it and it just comes back to us. Okay, so let's put some things in there. Let's go and put, say, a button. B-U-T-T-O-N. That's what I'll call my button. Button, I'm really imaginative. New object. Dot windows dot forms dot button. See, it doesn't help me, does it? Windows form button. Because a button just can't exist all in its own right. It needs to be within a form. Okay, but before we put it into a form, we'll say button dot text equals thanks for your troubleshooting, guys. It's good. Okay. And now what we have to do is we have to put it into the form. Did I make another mistake? Form dot control controls dot. Oh, it's going to be a long day. Dot add. Excuse me. And then what's the name of the thing we're putting in there? Come on, surely you can connect the dots. Okay, so I execute that, F8, and now if I go and show my form, we have a button. Does it do anything? No. If it was, I'd be really, really surprised right now. But stranger things have happened, I must say. So, okay, so that's how we do that. Now, the only way to really, I think, get more out of this is to have an agenda. With any sort of development environment, I feel that you've got to have an agenda to really drive your understanding of how a product works. So you have to have some incentive, in other words. So what I think we should do is we're going to create something. So I was thinking we might create a little calculator. How's that sound? See how quick we can create it. Okay, we're against time. So what we'll do is okay, so save me with time here because I'm definitely going to run short if I'm not careful. I'm going to do a little bit of pasting. Okay, so what we've got here is I'm going to create a new window of the type form, and then I'm going to give it some text called TechEd Australia Calculator. Fine? Easy. Too easy. Now what we're going to do is I need to have a variable to store the data in that we're actually adding or subtracting from or whichever. This is going to be a pretty basic calculator, guys, so don't expect it to be scientific or anything. That takes an extra 5 minutes. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll say calc value equals zero. We don't really have to declare that within PowerShell, but I do it as a best practice so I know that, you know, sort of set everything even. So what we're going to need now is a button. Now we saw how to create a button before, and so what we'll do is create a button, a new object, of course, Windows Form buttons, button, and then we'll give it some text and we'll call it plus. F8 that. Did I do an F8 on this? Anyway, I'm going to. Okay, we have to, what I'd like to do, what did you see with that form before? Where was the button located? It's up the top, wasn't it? So it's because it's at position 0.0, that's where it's going to be because it hasn't been set. So what we have to do is tell the button where it's going to go. And so what we do is we say button, the plus button dot location equals object, a new object of drawing point. So we can sort of create an XY coordinate, okay? And so what we're saying is let's place it in 20 or X 20, Y 50, if you like. Okay? And now what we have to do, remember before we didn't have any action associated with our button? So what we need to do now is have an action. Now if I can explain this little piece. Okay? What the button object has a method called click. And what we want to do is add a response to the event that gets fired when someone clicks that button. Okay? So if we can have a look at this little line of code here, we're saying, okay, we're going to add a click. What's going to happen when we add that click? Now, if you can see the curly we can see two sets of brackets there. You've got your sort of standard sort of round brackets. And inside that, you'd normally just put the command you're going to run. But because I've got multiple commands I want to run, what I need to do is put in some curly brackets, which creates a block of code which gets treated as one. Does that make sense? Okay. So what I'm then doing is saying, okay, if you click plus, then what we want to do is get the calc value that we've got and make it equal to the input field that I haven't actually created yet, I might add. That's not a problem at the moment. So the input field is going to be a little text box so we can actually type in the number that we want to add something to. Okay, and then I'm setting up another variable called operator, which is just a text string of plus, so that when I click equals down the track, I know what it was we're trying to do. Does that make sense? So we've got the value that's in the text, we've got the value that's just been entered, and when we click equal, and then when we click plus, we'll now know what operator it's going to be. And then when we click equals, we'll say, oh, okay, so you wanted to get those two numbers and add them together. I'll show you the result. Okay, so, excuse me. I'm just going to put the text box on there now. It's good to do this a bit earlier in the code. I haven't run the other yet. There's my text box. In this case, it's a Windows Form text box. It's a new object, and we're saying to place it in 20, 20. Okay, we've run that. Now we'll go and add our button. Okay, do you want to have a look at it and see what it looks like so far? Okay, so if we're going to do that, then we need to do a show dialog, don't we? Is it going to work yet? What's that? Exactly. Okay, we haven't added them. Okay, we added it before in the previous one. Okay, but we still have to add them. So, let's add them. Now we'll have a look. And there's what the calculator looks like so far. So we can put some data in there. We can click plus, and it's probably going to give us something a little bit weird here because we haven't really joined the dots yet. But the form key's running. Okay, let's close that up. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to add in the equals button. Really quickly, and we'll place that here, and we'll have a look at what this code looks like. Of course, there's a lot of other buttons we can add. So what I've done is I've created an equals button, or a button equals if you like, given it the text that looks like an equals sign, and then we're saying, okay, we're going to position it on X20, Y170, and then when someone clicks this, I've got it. There's actually a few ways I could have done it. I just kept simple with an if operator. I could have used a switch operator as well, which would have made more sense. But I think if is a little bit easier for some people to understand. So I went, if the operator equals, remember before when we click the button, it sets a variable called operator to whatever the button is that's clicked, equals plus. Then we change the text field to whatever the value was when we clicked the operator before, plus whatever's currently in the input field. Okay, so is anyone seeing holes in there? And we have to... Sorry, what was that? Sorry, I didn't catch what you said. The answer, if you remember how a calculator works, it's got one screen. Is that right? The answer is where you put the data in. So that's how I'm working with the classic calculator. We could do something advanced and have like the... What's that? The operator. Is that what the mistake was before, is it? Was it? Oh, yeah. I'm only working with some basic math here. Okay, so what the intention is down the track is to add the plus, minus, divide, times in here. We can put in a number here. So we press 45 plus. Okay. And then we go 7 equals. Is that right? So there's the calculator starting to come together now. Okay. So how do we create the other buttons? Well, I've already created the logic for what they do when they get clicked. But basically, what I could just do is copy and paste all the other, or the section for creating the plus button, and change it to, button minus. Change the position a little so it sits somewhere differently. Change the operator name, and we've got a little calculator that does basic math for us. So calculator's not very hard to make, is it? Okay, so we haven't got much time. That's some of the GUI component. I want to get on to the fun stuff a little later. So what I'm going to do is flip back. We'll have a bit of a look at workflows. Now, built into the .NET framework is a set of capabilities, keep it generic, for creating workflows. What's a workflow? It's a flowchart. Okay, we start in one spot, we do something, we might have some conditions that decide whether we go one way or another, and ultimately we end and we create some sort of effect or output or otherwise. Okay, so there's a lot of workflow tools out there. The one that I like to show is actually a free one that I found that's on Codeplex. Well, it's open source. Okay, it's PowerShell workflow.codeplex.com, as you can see there. And for the sake of time, I'm only going to do a quick little look at this one. I apologize if it disappoints you, but you can grab me afterwards. And I'll just bring it up. Okay, so this is it here. And it's very sort of rudimentary, this workflow this workflow tool. But it's sort of, it does what you want. Again, there's third-party ones out there, and the ultimate workflow is, what did I call it before? System Center Orchestrator. Okay, it does more than just PowerShell. Okay, it's a really, really capable product. That's the glue in your data center, I think you'll find. Okay, so as you can see, what we do is we have a start place. We can then go and place PowerShell scripts into the workflow. We then go and join up an order of events. Okay, and it's all very visual. Now this is working, if you're looking at this, for those people who are developers, you can actually see the different classes that are in use within the .NET workflow component. Okay, rather than, this is sort of built directly off that that namespace. Okay, if we want, we can even go and place in of course, conditional operators like an if. So we create our if operator. We show where it's coming after. We then come in, we place an expression, and then we say what we're going to do if it's true, what we're going to do if it's false. Okay, and so what we can do is we can go and drop in, say, another PowerShell commandlet in there, or script within there. If we click on the top up here, what we can do if we go to one of these PowerShell modules is go to the properties and say that we're using a script file and then specify where it is we're going to find our script. And I'm just going to quickly... get the script. Just want to show everyone a little tip. It's amazing how many people don't know this one, and I think everyone needs to know it. I hope you all know it already, in fact. I'm not insulting you. If you hold down shift, right click on a file, there's a little extra thing that appears called copy as path. Has anyone seen that before? Yeah, not as many, but now you all have. Okay, what does that do? It does this. I'll just delete that, and now I'll just do a paste. Okay. Cool thing about it is you can go to Explorer and click whatever files you want, whatever objects you want. It'll give you all of them in a text file, or all of them in that one paste. It's really, really good. Okay, so it makes it a lot easier. We can go and place our script there. And so what will happen, excuse me, is, of course, when we click Start, it'll go and run the script. To be honest, I can't remember what this script does. Okay, we've got a lot of options here for saying whether or not the PowerShell is going to run isolated, but normally what will happen is the variables from one session will pass to the next session, the next activity, if you like, and then we can also pass the pipeline on to any conditional operators so we can have some decisional logic. And so you could use this to, you know, perform some sort of rudimentary tasks. Again, the main workflow product that I'd focus on would be something like Orchestrator if you're up for it. But there's a lot of other third-party ones out there from other Microsoft partners as well. And so if you just do a search for PowerShell workflow in a search engine, for most IT pros in particular, you'll find that these GUI-based tools are a lot more accessible than doing this all via code, because that's what .NET provides you with, is a workflow foundation for... coding workflows. Sorry? Yeah, you know what I mean. Okay. Okay, WMI. Who knows WMI? IT pros, come on. Okay, if you're an IT pro and you don't know WMI, then you're lucky. No. WMI, what is WMI? Windows Management Instrumentation. That's Microsoft's name for it. Okay? What is it more fundamentally, I suppose? Well, actually, if we look at, you know, what it is outside of the Microsoft world, its other name is WS Management. Okay? It's part of an alliance between Microsoft and a number of other organizations to create a management framework for computers which is fairly open. Okay, and of course, Windows Management Instrumentation is the Microsoft for Windows implementation. The thing about WMI is you can query just about anything about the computer and find out what it's up to. Okay, for those people that use WMI all the time, I'm probably preaching to the converted, but this is the thing that you'll find that most of your large-scale products within your organisation will want to query in order to find out information about about the machines in your organisation, whether it be applications or services, or whether it be the actual operating system itself. I've done a lot of work with WMI with Hyper-V and actually scripting, the creation of a virtual machine or the creation of a virtual hard disk is via WMI. Okay, so PowerShell doesn't have any out-of-the-box Hyper-V. Using that as an example, Hyper-V management capabilities. You can get PowerShell management capabilities for Hyper-V if you use System Center Virtual Machine Manager. But if you're not using System Center Virtual Machine Manager, the way that you'd access Hyper-V will be via WMI. So just using that as an example. So let's have a quick look at WMI. And the first thing that I'll show you is WBEM test. If you type in into the Windows Start search WBEM test, you get this little tool. It's a terribly ugly and awkward tool. Yes or no? Yes. And there's definitely better ways to do it. The reason I'm showing you this is because if you walk up to any computer, this is available. Or any Windows box, this is available. Okay. And I'll just use this as a quick demonstration. You are going to hit your head against this if you have to use it and go, oh, but I understand it fairly well now. And I understand where it's coming from. But Windows Management Instrumentation Tester allows us to connect into the namespace. What the default namespace that usually comes up is the root common information model version 2. Okay. And if I click connect on that, okay, and then I enumerate the classes. If I click recursive, then what it will do is it'll go and enumerate all the different classes we can access within Windows. So we can see there's 810 objects and counting. I'll give it a little while. My computer's not the fastest one in the world. In fact, I think it might have finished there now. No, it hasn't. 1,025. And it's done. Okay. Now, if we have a look within here, and of course, using the scrolly bar, and you can't change this window. It is awkward, as I said. You can find nearly every component of the operating system within here and query properties about it. And there's also methods in a lot of circumstances for doing stuff to those things. So a common one that people will show you, and I'm not going to do any different because everyone understands what it is to go to Win32 Logical Disk. There it is there. So if we look at Win32 Logical Disk, if I double-click on that, it's now telling us in hopefully what's becoming more familiar now, that object-oriented speak, what we have available to do to Win32 Logical Disk. And so we can see there's properties and there's methods. Properties are things we can find out, and sometimes we can apply them. And we've got methods, things that we can do to a disk. And as you can see there, we can do a check disk. You can reset it. You can set its power state. Okay, and there's a lot of information around what we can find out. And so the common things that people want to know about a disk is maybe going to be its, you know, whether it's compressed or not, or the free space. Okay. Now, at the moment, it's not showing us any specific disk. We have to have a look at what instances we have in the system that are available. So I click on instance. It's now showing all the different instances of disks we have on this computer. So we can see what we've got, C, D, E, and V. Okay. So now we can see the different instances. There's multiple. I can go and have a look at a particular one, and now it's showing me what properties we have. And so if we go to something like the free space like we saw before, maybe if I just press F, double click, we now get a value. And you can see there's a few windows getting there, wasn't it? Okay. Now, the reason I show you that is so you can see in a more visual form the way that we access WMI and PowerShell. So what I'll do now is I'll just create a new little page here, a new file, and show you how we get access to WMI within PowerShell. The way we get access is to use a command known as getWMI or gWMI. I'm going to store it in a variable though, so I'll say my disk equals getWMI object. If we press the hyphen, it now gives us the opportunity to have a look at what parameters are available. So we have a look at what it's asking for in this case. So where are you? There we go. Namespace. I don't always have to do this. It does default, but I'm going to put in root backslash CIMV2. I'm having a good day. Okay. And then we have to perform a query. If you're a SQL person, this next bit will make more sense. But basically what I'm going to do is say I'm going to select everything or all properties from win32_logical_disk. Okay, I'll run that. And now, if I put in my disk and press F8, it's now showing me the different instances of disk. So that's, we can then treat it like any other object. Can you see that? C, D, E. How do we only show one? Where object. So piping to where will basically, it filters the pipeline to say, okay, we only want to see rows, or we only want to see the data where a certain thing matches. I just realised we're time. Where object. And if we have a look at the properties, we've got device ID here. So what I'll say is $_dot basically means get from the current pipeline. The device ID, EQ, and we'll put in, say, the D drive. And if I press F8, we're now only seeing the D drive. We can see free space file size and volume size, volume name. Okay, I've just realised we're at time, and I've run out a bit of, out of time. The other things I was wanting to show, and I'm more than happy to show if you want, we want to take it offline, is how to throw this stuff into a piece of C# code and compile it into an .exe. Really easy. I can even give that piece of code to you if you want to make it really easy. And if anyone wants to stick around as well, I've got a little Space Invader game that we can make. Okay, with the GUIs. Okay. I'd just like to thank everybody now, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference, and I hope that what we've spoken about today will help you a bit with automating your organization.